When they sense that you feel your prices are high, if they know anything about buying, they're going to start hammering you on your price. Now, cracking is when the salesperson signals to the customer that they're willing to cut the price that they're saying. What I mean by cracking is you crack on your own price. And cracking occurs when the customer has asked the price, and the sales rep says, you know, it's $200. And the customer says, well, that sounds a little high to me. And the reaction of the sales rep is, well, you know, I want to work with you. Well, what were you expecting to pay? Well, what will it take to get your business? What do I need to do to get the business?
I can't tell you how many times I've had salespeople tell me that.
Yeah, and how about this? Tell me where I need to be. I mean, you know, that's a statement by the sales rep saying, hell, I don't even know my price. You know, I think the reason the boss sent me out here on this job is to find out how much we're supposed to charge for it. You tell me.
You know what's funny about that, Larry, is if you show someone a price and then you cut it for no reason, you just, where do I need to be, how can I get your business, what you're just telling them is that you were trying to rip them off in the first place.
Yeah, among other things.
Yeah, among other things. That's right.
Yeah.
So what does cheap price do to your credibility?
Well, it destroys your credibility. The point is that people pretty much understand value. You know, price means how much does each one cost. Value means what do I get for how much I'm paying. Most people at a very young age, as children, learn the difference between price and value. You probably did. I know I did as a kid. You know, you saved your money. You had a few pennies, and you went to buy something that you really wanted, a baseball, whatever. And you bought it because it was cheap, and that was all the money you had. And you took it out, and after about three times around the diamond, getting hit a few times by a bat, and so the damn thing fell apart. And, you know, you're dejected, and you go home, and, you know, your dad, mother, uncle, somebody, next-door neighbor explain to you the difference between price and value. He says, well, now, you know you bought this because it was cheap. The reason some things are cheap is because they're not very good. You knew there were better baseballs. You could have bought a better baseball, but you didn't really have the money. But maybe next time it would be better to continue to save longer so you can buy a better baseball because it will last longer. And most people fundamentally believe you get what you pay for. Most people know if it's going to be better, it will probably cost more. It will probably take better materials. It will probably take longer assembly time. It will probably take greater diligence in installation, measuring, fabricating, all of the things that go into whatever it is that the person is selling. And there's no argument but what value is why people buy, and people know that. But they will still try to tell you it's price because if they can get the same material, same job, same work from you, for less money, well, then they got a better value because they hammered you down on price. But unless you cut your price, they can't get that lower price. And then the alternative is, do they see or feel that the competition is giving them better value than you are? And, you know, your competition probably doesn't do any better job of selling than you do. Now, if you up your game in selling, you're going to win a lot more than that. Of those kinds of things, then you're ever going to lose because most salespeople, again, they don't like selling. It's the easiest way to sell anything, cut the price. But that's not selling. That's giving stuff away.
Yeah, I would argue. Yeah, I agree. Selling by price isn't selling.
No.
No. And, you know, as far as credibility, you know, when you charge too cheap of a price, people will actually get suspicious if it's too low.
Yeah, what am I not going to get? What's wrong with it? You know, why is this so cheap? You know, something about this smells.
Yeah, yesterday it happened to me. I went in, I was buying some shirts, And I didn't look at the price. I just grabbed a shirt. I liked the color. Mm-hmm. I even liked the fit. I came back out and was looking at other colors, and I saw the price. It was so low that I went, holy smokes, is this thing going to fall apart when I wash it? I didn't buy it. It was too cheap.
Yeah.
So I hear what you're saying, and that's there are instances where actually raising price actually caused something to sell better.
Oh, sure. And even in today's down real estate market, this, quote, trick still works well by the people knowledgeable enough to use it. A lot of times someone who's put a house up for sale and the thing doesn't sell, that, you know, the typical reaction is, well, I guess I'll have to cut the price. And your real estate agent, who is really working for the buyer, even though you're going to pay him, is the one who's telling you, well, you know, we better get the price down. A lot of people who know the market know this. You raise the price and you sell the thing at a higher price than you started asking, because price makes a statement.
Yeah.
Price makes a credibility statement. A low price makes a negative, derogatory, diminutive statement. A high price makes a positive, salutary statement about your products and services.
Yeah, you mentioned the $47,000 Rolls Royce in your book.
Yeah.
You know, would you buy a Rolls Royce for $47,000?
Of course not.
Yeah.
What's wrong with it?
Was it missing an engine?
Yeah.
You know? So, well, you know, Larry, with the box stores and the internet, floor covering is a very commoditized product. And if you're selling a commoditized product, why is price still not the only consideration?
Well, the one I like to use on this is toilet paper. You know, now you use the word commodity. You know, I'll argue there aren't many commodities in the market. I'm confident most all of our listeners have used toilet paper one time or another in their life. I had a client years ago made toilet paper. Well, now I think most people would view toilet paper as a commodity. This guy couldn't sell enough of his toilet paper. There weren't enough price buyers. In fact, I'd defy or dare any of our listeners to this now or in the future who will hear it to go to the local grocery store or wherever they buy their toilet paper, probably the grocery store, and talk to some of the clerks and say, of these brands of toilet paper that you have here on the shelf, and there'll be three or four different brands, which one is the biggest seller? I'll guarantee you the clerks who are stocking those shelves will know which is the biggest seller, and they will point at the most expensive toilet paper there. Why? You know, it's insanity. And what I told this guy was, raise your price. Don't go out there and try to buy the toilet paper business by a low price, because people think something's wrong with it. See, and that's just a throwback to the earlier question that we had. I had a client out in Napa Valley in California selling wine. Wasn't doing any good. I said, put a different label on the bottles and triple the price. Sales took off. It's unbelievable the way people react to price and quality. You know, you want to talk about money? Hey, money's a commodity. Most of the money any of us have is supposedly electronic glitch down at the bank. And, of course, we know what's going on in the marketplace right now. But the point is, people should try to rent, because you rent money. Let's face it, when you take out a loan, you're renting money, and presumably you're going to pay it back.
Yes.
We get into the politics of the day. But anyhow, presumably you're going to get the lowest interest rates you can get. Yet the facts are, astute buyers and people that aren't particularly smart understand the difference between a low interest rate and the terms and the conditions and prepayment penalties and all the other factors that enter into it. And so while they'll tell themselves they're looking for the lowest interest rate, a lot of these idiots today have gotten burned because of, wow, I got a low interest rate and here I go. Well, now what's happened? Well, the arms adjusted and so forth. And again, I'm not trying to get into the current political economic situation mess that we're in. It's just the points can be made by looking at virtually anything that is for sale. You know, whether you're buying file cabinets for your office or, if you will, carpeting for your home or whatever it is, people don't buy this stuff on price. But the buyer will tell you, we view that as a commodity. We think of that as commodity. We buy commodities strictly on price. You know, well, years ago I was working for a company that sold cast iron pipe. And before the meeting started, I went, they had a little buffet breakfast, and I went to the breakfast because, A, I was hungry, and B, I thought I'd, you know, sit at a table and just hear guys talking and get a feel for the group. So I go and get my breakfast and go sit at one of these big round tables. You know, we were in a big hotel down in Hilton Head, I think it was. But anyhow, there's vacant place sitting. I kind of invited myself, sit down. You guys mind if I join you? Oh, no, no, sit down. They're real friendly. And I thought I ought to introduce myself because they clearly all knew each other. I said, I'm Larry Steinmetz. I'll be, you know, making a presentation this morning. And this one guy looked at me and he said, you guys going to be talking about how to sell at higher prices? And I said, yeah, you know, talk about it, my food. And he says, you ever sold cast iron pipe? And I thought, you know, this doesn't sound too friendly, and I could lie and say yes, and I'll never pass a test past that, or I better, like Mark Twain once said, when in doubt, tell the truth. So I thought, all right, I'm sticking with the truth here. And I looked down and said, no, sir, I've never sold cast iron pipe. He says, you know cast iron pipe's a commodity, don't you? I said, well, I've heard people say that. He says, I'll tell you what we want to learn from you this morning. We want to find out how we can sell a commodity. Let's say 4-inch cast iron pipe. How you can sell a commodity at a premium price in a bid situation to a government agency when the law requires low bid gets it. And, you know, he's pretty satisfied with himself. And I thought, you know, they're only paying me to say this once this morning. And here this silly turkey wants me to say it, go through it all right here at the breakfast table. I thought, I'm going to sucker this guy in. And I looked at my watch and said, oh, my God, look, it's almost time to start the meeting. Listen, I've got to go get set up. I'm sorry, I can't stay. I'll catch you later. And I got up and left the table. And I thought, you know, those guys are thinking, yeah, boy, got that guy on the run. You know, how do you look scared? I wasn't scared. Anyway, we go in, we start the meeting. The president of the company finally gets, you know, the introductions out of the way. I'm up. And I said, now, you know, there's two things you need to know if you're going to sell anything at a premium price. Number one, if price were the only reason anybody bought anything, only one seller would sell all there is sold, whatever that product is, that's whoever, can survive at the lowest price till everybody else went broke. And I said, that hasn't happened in cast iron pipe or anything else. I said, the second thing you need to know, though, is that if price were the only reason anybody bought anything, we don't need sales reps. And then I stopped and I looked at these guys because they all came walking into the room together and sat down together, you know, the way people get together.
Sure, yeah.
And I looked right at them and I said, now I had it on good authority this morning at my breakfast table, and I'm just leaning on these guys, you know, that you guys are selling 4-inch cast iron pipe. It's commodity and it's bought strictly on price. I said, now, I want to tell you why I'm really here this morning. I'm not really here to talk about how do you sell at premium prices. I'm actually here in my capacity as a corporate hatchet man. It's my duty to inform you that because we're selling cast iron pipe and it's bought strictly on price, we've decided we no longer need a sales force. We're going to handle all our sales transactions electronically. So it's my official duty to inform you this morning that we're terminating your services as sales reps. And boy, I got to drop on a whole bunch of them. I mean, they're, you know, looking around what's going on. And, you know, I'm mean enough. And fortunately, there's a foyer outside the meeting room where there had been some tables set up. I said, now, what we're going to do is help you with outplacement, help you find other jobs. If your last name starts the letter A through H, once you go out that door, I through S go through that door, T through the, I'm going to have them all get up and walk out of the meeting room and start their outplacement services. And the only thing that blew my cover was the president of the company, who knew, you know, why I was there, got to laughing. And some guys, of course, picked up on that. They said, well, you're not really firing us this morning. And I said to the president of the company in front of the group, I says, look, I'm running this meeting. I says, you know, I was told you're selling a commodity, and commodities are sold strictly on price. If that's true, we don't need a one of you. Now, we can either talk about how do you sell a commodity at a premium price in a bid situation to a government agency when the law requires low bid gets it, or we can can your butts. Which way you want to go? Well, the consensus was, well, let's hear what you got to say. We had a pretty good meeting. Now, can you sell a commodity at a premium price in a bid situation, government agency, law requires low bid? Yes, hell yes, but you got to sell. A story, you know, 20 years ago now, Denver built a new airport, first whole new airport built in the country, and I guess still the only totally new, including runways and everything. Pittsburgh built a new airport, for example, but just the building, not, you know, they still use the same runways. Anyway, Holnam was the largest manufacturer of cement at the time. They were a client of mine. They sold the federal government 900,000 tons. Listen to that number, 900,000 tons of Portland cement at $82 a ton when low bid was $63 a ton. It was bid in 18 different lots, 50,000 tons each. Holnam bid in each time at $82 a ton. Low bid each time, $63 a ton. How'd they do that? Portland cement is an absolute commodity. It's crushed limestone. It's made all over the world. They did it by selling.
Yep.
They did it by selling quality. No, not quality, because the competitors was the same thing. You know, the definition of a commodity is no discernible difference one from another. It's Portland cement. So quality wasn't an issue. Price wasn't an issue. They sold service. They sold salesmanship. And the real key to their success in making those sales was on-time delivery. What they did that their competitors would not do is they guaranteed on-time delivery. The truth of the matter was that airport was built and finished ahead of schedule. Then it sat there for 16 months, you'll recall, before they ever used it. They continued to use the old Stapleton Airport because the baggage system, the automated baggage system at the new airport, didn't work. And again, you get back to, is it quality? Well, in that case, on the baggage system, it was quality. In terms of the cement, cement is cement. It was Portland cement. There are different kinds of cement. You know, there's masonry cement, for example. There's lots of different kinds of cement. But we're talking a slab, a runway, a driveway, a sidewalk, a foundation to your home. Portland cement. But it could still be differentiated in terms of what we are doing for the customer. And the thing, when they started building that airport, they knew they had to do is get that airport started or they'd never get it built because there were so many people against building the airport.
Well, you know, the idea that you just said it with the baggage, you know, the baggage thing.
Yeah.
Apparently, maybe somebody went with the cheap price bidder on that one.
Yeah.
Quite possible. So they got baggage, you know, the baggage machinery that didn't work right. You know, Larry, we're about 5 minutes till the top of the hour. Do we need to end right at the top, or can you go 5 or 8 minutes?
I can go a little lower.
Okay,
sure.
Fantastic. Well, because there's two other things I wanted to ask you about. One was not messing with price buyers, and the other was talking a little bit about margins and what happens when you cut your margins. Real quick, Larry, why do you not want to mess with price buyers, even if they are contractors or commercial or government jobs?
Simple reason.
Okay.
Most expensive customer you ever sell to is price buyer. Let's define a price buyer. Price buyer is a prospective customer whose mentality is you, the seller, are not going to make any money off me, the buyer. I'm going to beat on you and pound on you and hammer on you and squeeze on you till there's no possible profit left in this deal for you. Well, if that's true, why do you want to sell to them? Practice working. Because if you're not going to make any money on it, all you're doing is practicing working, you know.
Now, yeah.
Marvin Shutt, let me kind of walk on you here just a minute.
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
I want to say this. Marvin Shutt was a mentor of mine years ago. Marvin's long dead because I was a really young man at the time, and he was the executive director finally of the National Sporting Goods Association. But he one time told me something that I memorized that made me a ton of money. He said, Larry, price buyers, take all your sales time, do all the complaining, forget to pay you, tell everybody else how little they pay you, drive off your good customers. Not going to buy from you next time unless your price is too low then. Only continue to buy from you so long as your price is too low until such time your company goes broke, which time you're going to say, I knew they were going broke, price too low, could have told them that. Run up your investment in inventory, land, building, machinery, equipment, trucks, warehouse, space, people to supply their needs. They'll lie to you and they'll steal from you. He said, other than that, they're good accounts. You don't want to sell to a price buyer. A price buyer is devoted to the proposition you're not going to make any money on. Why do you want to sell to them? You know, you can go broke just fine without selling to a price buyer.
Totally agree. And, you know, don't make the, I just want to add this, don't make the mistake of thinking that because somebody initially brings up the objection of price, that they are truly a price buyer.
That's right. Yeah.
Go ahead, Larry.
Well, no, people... Anybody who studied buying knows that you always complain about the seller's price. You always challenge the seller's price. Just because someone raises the issue of price doesn't mean price is important to them. But if they're going at it, quote, professionally, so to speak, as a buyer, they're going to challenge your price. That doesn't mean that price is the most important thing. It doesn't mean, certainly, that price is the only thing. But, you know, there's no harm in trying. Never get mad at a customer because he tries to haggle your price. But just realize price isn't the issue unless you make it the issue.
There we go. And what I hear you saying, Larry, is for that, you know, counter their objection, have your unique selling propositions, let them know why they should pay more. But if they still, at that point, only want to pay cheapest price, say, fare thee well.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, well, give them cab fare down to your competitors. I mean, you know, let them drive them broke.
Yeah, give them. I used to do that. I used to give out the numbers of my competitors.
Sure.
And
yeah.
I say, well, you know what? I teach my clients that the holy grail of selling on higher prices is to be able to look your client in the eye and say, oh, well, if you're looking for the cheapest price, I got to tell you, we're the most expensive in town.
Yeah.
Would you like to know why?
Yeah.
And I would literally give them the numbers of my competitors.
Sure.
If they were a price buyer. I didn't care. I didn't want them.
That's right.
Now, you say in your book that if a company is operating at a 35% gross margin and they cut their prices by 10%, you talk about how much they'll have to increase their volume in order to make it up. And frankly, it's until you peel the numbers apart, it seems unbelievable. But how much, if you're at a 35% gross margin, you cut your price by 10%, how much do you have to increase your sales volume?
Okay. Now, I'll give you a simple answer, but then I want to editorialize. If you cut your price by 10% on a 35% margin, you're going to have to increase your sales dollars about 80%, but you will have to double the amount of work or the number of units that you get, because you see, when you cut your price by 10%, you're getting 90 cents on the dollar. So while you would double your sales dollar amount would go up 80%, you'd have to double your units. Again, without paper and pencil or to spell it out, and it's in the book as to how to do this, but the short answer is you'll have to double how much you're selling. And incidentally, any of our listeners who are down in margins that are like down to 25% instead of the 35%, and you cut price 10%, you will have to more than triple the amount that you're selling.
Now, the mathematics of this work out, I've seen it many times before. We don't have time to go into it today, so I want you to take it on faith until you order Larry's book. It's absolutely true. Even as hard as it sounds to believe, you cut your prices by 10%, you're going to have to double, on average, you're going to have to double your volume in order to make it up. So what happens if you raise your price by 10%?
Well, it really flip-flops. You raise your price 10% on a 35% margin, you can probably lose a third of your total amount of sales in units, and your sales revenues would go down by, it actually figures to 27%. But again, now you're getting a buck and a dime for each one you're selling rather than a buck a piece. So your sales dollar decline isn't as great as the unit decline that you can absorb and still make as much money. Now, one point I'd like to make on this subject. If you decide you want to cut your price, understand that you'll not only have to sell twice as much if you're on a 35% margin and you cut your price by 10%, but let me ask you this question. Who are you going to get for a customer when you cut your price 10%? You're going to get price buyers who take all your sales time, do all the complaining, forget to pay you, tell everybody, and that whole litany of stuff that Marvin Shutt taught me. Now, if you raise price, you may lose some sales, but you can lose a third of your sales.
A third?
A third of your sales, and you'll still make as much money, and you're not going to have people in there niggling, you know, arguing about price and so on and so forth. And you can really provide to the customer the service and the attention, the detail and the hand-holding and all the other lovely things that, you know, come under the heading of service with a customer.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, we're not going to go into the math. It's a little, there's a lot to it. But it's spelled out in the book very clearly. You raise your price by 10%, you can lose a third and still make the same amount of money. And you're not going to you raise your price 10%, you're not going to come close to losing a third of your customers.
No, you're just not going to do it.
Yeah, you're not even going to notice. So if you take one thing away from this call, everybody go raise your price 10%. You know, Larry, what I'd like to do right now before we get to Q&A is if you could just take a few minutes and tell us a little more about the services and products you offer and how anybody listening to this can get more information.
Okay, well, the best thing to do would be to look on my website, and let me give you the website address. Keyword is Pricing Expert, PRICINGEXPERT. So it's www.pricingexpert.com. That gives the complete listing of, I've actually got two books. One's on higher margins, the other's on higher prices. If you buy one, you don't really need the other. Because they both have the things that we talked about today in the book, so buy only one, don't buy two of them. Or don't buy both. One is more for professional and the other is more for retailers and manufacturers and service type people. But anyhow, in there we also have DVDs. One that I would really recommend because it's short, well, my most popular selling is called Raising Prices and Making Them Stick. It's me live, about 80-minute presentation on a DVD. It really covers most of what we talked about here because we've been, about an hour in this conversation. And I have other books in there and other CDs and DVDs. I do have the public seminar, which is the one on how to sell at prices higher than your competitors. And, you know, the pricings and everything on those products are on the website, and that's the best way to order the material.
Fantastic. And I would recommend getting your hands on anything that Larry has to offer. This isn't the, you know, I've heard Larry do a bunch of different seminars. Listened to him before, read his book. It's good stuff, and you couldn't make a better investment. Real quick, we're going to take just one or two quick questions, so I'm going to unmute the call. If anybody has a question, that now would be the time to do it. Okay, any questions for Larry Steinmetz?
Yeah, Larry, George Smith, Fort Wayne, Tower, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Received a government contract for a wastewater treatment plant. They went ahead and picked it out.
I don't know how much. All right, you don't buy a price.
Are you hearing me okay?
Yeah,
okay,
I can
hear
you.
Okay, and we got it all done. Proper percentage. I came in at about 38. The next thing you know, they start cutting things out of the contract. And I said, now, wait, I've got a written contract and all these prices. That, well, their answer was, we don't have as much, and we want to do a couple of other things with it. So I said, well, stay with the things that you said we can do and find out something else that you want to back out, as this is a brand-new building and project. Don't necessarily take it off the floor covering people just because we're the last ones in there.
Yeah.
And their comeback was very simple. Well, we've only got so much money in the budget, and we need to figure out which way, one way or the other, how we're going to back it out from whom. So my issue is, one, a little bit of price, but how to keep my contract back to where it was, and that's, I guess it's not exactly on one of the questions you're looking at raising your prices, because we did end up with 38% for materials and labor across the board, and we're happy with that.
Yeah.
And we did it as a veteran businessman, so we're happy with that. We know we accept it. It's now they're just backing out things like window blinds, and they took the countertops back out. They said they're going to do it in-house and a couple little things, and they managed to take out about $10,000 out of the bid.
Yeah. Well, of course, I'd have to know exactly what your contract with them states and so forth, but my basic posture on this is, when an old trick of purchasing is to suggest you're going to order more than you're going to take, to try to get the seller then to give you a better price because of the, quote, the large volume, that kind of mentality. And then they renege on it after the fact. Now, I would hold their feet to the fire and say, hey, we've got a contract here for this, and that's what it is. Now, if you want to back out of portions of this contract, I'm going to have to recalculate the other aspects that you're still going to take. And in essence, I'd add back my gross margin into the price of what I would add back the gross margin that I would have taken on the items that they're cutting out into the contract price that we're going to honor. You understand
Excellent.
What I'm saying?
Oh, 100%. I've had thoughts on that. You just confirmed my thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the point is they sign a contract. Well, what's a contract mean then if they walk away from it?
Well, and the other thing is they're procrastinating on giving me the order. I've had the contract now going on 6 weeks, and when are you ready to place? And I've done all my proper due diligence, got them samples, qualified colors, and everything else. All they got to do is, all right, here's even the remaining product that we choose, pick it and send it in. So I don't think it's a money issue or a bond issue, so to speak. I just think that we probably got somebody locally there that wants to give the business to somebody locally.
Yeah.
And that's what's
and
going on.
And make them pay for it. I mean, you know, that's your agreement with it.
Yeah, contract's a contract. This is coming back after the fact. I agree. Hold their feet to the fire.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think the economy, maybe they think, is down and they can give me the knuckle under. But
sure.
That's their problem, not yours. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's get one more quick question. We're just going to take one more. Who's it going to be? Anybody? Going once?
Hey, Larry, it's Roger Connolly from New York.
Hey, Roger.
Yeah, Roger. Hi. How you doing, Jim? What formula are you using to come up with 35%?
To come up with the 35% margin or the volume swing?
35% margin.
Well, are you talking on selling flooring product?
Yeah.
Specifically?
Yeah.
Yeah. Labor and materials. Gross margin on labor.
Yeah, gross margin is calculated by taking your selling price and subtracting from it your cost of goods sold. That's essentially labor and materials for you.
Well, let's say I pay $100 for it.
Yeah.
What should I sell it for?
Well, okay. Now you get me. I'm going to have to get out my calculator because you would have to add enough on top of that. If that was your cost, your sales price then would have to be high enough so that you would have remaining, once you subtracted the 100 from your selling price, that the dollar amount you'd have left would be 35% of that selling
price. It'd be about 153.
Yeah.
Be about, let me double check the math here. Yeah, it'd be 153 would be a 35% gross margin on material. If labor and materials was $100, You're going to take the formula for 35% would be 100 divided by 65%.
Let's do it real simple in our head. Let's say we want a 33% margin. If our cost is 100 and we sold it for 150, we'd have 50 left, and that is 33%, 33 and a third percent
okay,
of 150.
Okay, I'm clear on that. We're going.
So,
okay.
Hey, this is Nathan here in Auburn.
Yeah.
I found an easy way to do that to make it easy for everybody is just divide it by 7.
Okay.
I believe that. I don't know. It puts you in the 30s. I'm not sure if it's 33 or 35, but...
Divide by 7%?
Yep. 100 divided by 7 and move the decimal.
Yeah.
Because I like to divide mine by 4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's different ways.
Okay.
So there's different ways to arrive at that final number, but basically, if something is costing you $100 to make a 35% margin, you're going to want to be at around 153 on your price.
Yeah.
So there's you can use different formulas to arrive at that.
Now, I was using I take the cost by 1.65.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
That'll work as well.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Larry, thank you so much for being here.
Glad to do it. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You know, I will say this one last thing. Larry has just scratched the surface of what's in his book. We could easily go for another hour. We've already gone 10, 12 minutes over, and Larry's very gracious to stay with us. But there is so much. I cannot recommend enough that you go onto Larry's website, dig in, order the materials. At the very minimum, get his book, How to Sell at Prices Higher Than Your Competitors. You will love it. It's an easy read, and it makes a ton of sense. Larry, again, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Okay. Bye
Thanks,
now.
Jim.